Who or what are we exactly?
It's a very difficult question, and the answer is very simple. I do not know. But well, I will explain, of course.
You're the first person to admit they do not know. So,
Of course we do not know. We do not know exactly. We do not know categorically. But we can, of course, we can explain some things about who we are. For me, the most essential thing of human being is connectedness, interaction. Mm-hmm. I am togetherness. I am a point in my network. I am you, so to speak, now that we sit here. So I am what is my connection. Mm-hmm. That's a definition that I'm a systems therapist, so that is also what I use in my work as a method of thinking.
So we are actually just a person because of other people.
Yes, I am. That's what the French philosopher Levinas says. Refer very often to him. I am in the face of the other. I am seen, and I exist because I am seen.
Would you say that then? In some point of view, we are actually just a mental construct. We have our own mental construct.
No, that's not why. I'm not a radical constructionist. I am body. I am a physical substance. But my existence, that physical substance of my body, starts to be a being, an existence, because you can see it, and the other can see it. Mm-hmm. The body becomes being. So it's, but there is a body, there is a physical thing that is not existing in the existential sense of the word when it is not seen. It becomes human when it is with the other. In German, the German philosopher Heidegger, he says, Dasein ist miteinander sein. We become human, we become being when we have, when we are part of togetherness.
It makes me think a bit of quantum mechanics, because there it also says when something is observed, it behaves completely different than when it's not in an observed state.
Yes.
So we actually become alive in some sense.
Sure.
When we are being.
Well, systems therapy refers a lot to all these quantum physics and things like that. Yes. It's directly, they use metaphors out of quantum physics.
Interesting.
So it's not crazy for me to say, to hear this. Yeah.
I think when we, for instance, when I think about myself, I think my girlfriend must have a definition of who I am in her mind, and maybe some clients of me must have another definition. And
sure.
I certainly have my own story.
Yes.
And I think we are. There's different stories.
Of course.
Would you say, if we think about mental health, it's really important to tell the right story about ourselves?
I'm a psychiatrist, so this is a question which is my core business. The right story. What do you think that we have multiple stories? So our self is the result of multiple stories. And they are fluid. They change over time. We are constantly in a kind of evolution. But of course, there is a basic bottom that at least gives the feeling that myself of yesterday and myself now and myself of tomorrow has some continuity. Otherwise, you become very anxious, I think, when you have the feeling that you're always different or something. So then healthy functioning is a fluid, continuous difference in a bottom of continuity of basic a basic feeling of being that is not too different in time. It's not so easy to express it. I think you can understand a bit.
It's a very hard question.
Yeah.
I'm asking, and I don't think there's one right answer for it.
When you have the feeling of a monolithic self that cannot change, that has no sense of flexibility in the context and in time, then you will have a problem with the world. But when there is no sense of self, when there is only fluidity, when you are only part of the world, then there is also a problem. And then you also become anxious. So you have to be flexible between self and non-self.
That's interesting. I am interested in Buddhism, for example. Not that I am a Buddhist, but they talk a lot about the self.
Yeah, yeah.
You have a healthy sense of self and a non-healthy.
Many people in our society, they are interested in Buddhism and these kind of thinking. Yes, sure. We don't believe in church anymore, in the Christian tradition here, and so we go to Buddhism in the Far East to look for spirituality, to look for sense, to look for mysticism, to look for the cosmic feeling of being. Yes, yes, yeah.
I think it has become something very mainstream, and it's not always a good thing. Everybody wants to meditate now, but I think meditation is just being in the moment with what you're doing or who you're speaking with. I think it's
wonderful that people can do that. My problem is with the very commercial misuse of these thoughts in our, in our capitalist society, so to say, that this spiritual dimension is used for making money and only for making money. That is the problem. The problem is not the meditation in itself. On the contrary, I think it's a very good thing that people can take time for themselves, that they can concentrate, that they can be in the flow of existence and things like that. Of course, that's a good thing. But in the very commercial form of meditation, it becomes a technique and not a philosophy, and that is a problem.
I think it
loses its core business then.
I think sometimes it's become some kind of productivity hack.
Yeah, sure. You go on a very expensive weekend and you meditate, and then Monday you go to the board of directors to make decisions and be strong and things like that. And that's not what meditation is about, I think.
So, we talked about Buddhism, and you mentioned that people used to believe in God and now not anymore.
In Western society, the mainstream, there's still people believing in God, and in Southern and Eastern cultures there is still a lot of God in their world. But here, of course,
I noticed that when I travel, for me it feels a bit absurd, because I'm not really a religious person, but then it's...
Sure. So it's a Western thing, yeah.
Would you say that people these days, they lack something because they don't have that much faith anymore?
That's not how I look at people. I'm not looking at people in the sense of lack. But I think that in secular society, in a society that has left classical religion behind, we have to think of spirituality, we have to think of our place in the cosmic wandering, to live in the right way. I think the human being is very fundamentally also a spiritual being, and so we have to look for a place of that human thing, and
it's not like we can abandon spirituality.
I don't think so. I think man needs some kind of spiritual, but of course that word is difficult. That it's also Heidegger, sein zum Tode, because we die and we know that we die, it's very essential, and so we have to, we need a meaning for our life. We cannot live without meaning. We need to give our existence some place in history or in cosmic space or in togetherness. That's how I see the place of man, in togetherness, in living together and taking care of the other and things like that. That's my existence, my existential vision of the world. So I think man is in need to give his life some form of existence more than just eating, sleeping, and working. We are in need of something more fundamental, a sense of being. That's what I think. I can be wrong, of course. It's very important to say that. I'm not talking in full truths or something like that. I can be wrong. But I'm a psychiatrist now for 30 years, 35 years, and these are my thoughts. And when I write them down, I see that many people say, well, that's interesting.
I think that's,
that's okay then.
What you say now about man's need for meaning is really the message in your latest book. I'll just show it on the camera. The art of being unhappy.
Yeah. This is the commercial in between this.
Yes. Now I will play a little tune and then.
Yeah, sure. go to the library and take it there. Okay.
But
yeah, that's what all my books are about. They're all in different forms on in the superficial layer, but in a deeper layer, it's all about how to live in a secular world, how to have an existence that makes sense. For me and my work also with people in a lot of suffering and despair and things like that, the deeper layer is always, what is this about? Why? Why?
Maybe a better question for the podcast would be, why are we not who or what are we? Do you think that would be a more meaningful question?
Why are we? What do you say exactly?
Why are we instead of who or what are we?
Yeah, sure. Of course, yeah.
Because I've been reflecting on the podcast, and I think that's the question I've been meaning to ask
from
the beginning.
But under the question, what are we, is why are we? That's the most fundamental philosophical question. I'm not a philosopher, a psychiatrist, but the most fundamental philosophical question is, why are we, and why are we not... Waarom sind wir? What is this all about? That's for philosophers, of course. But in my practice as a psychiatrist, it's an important question also. Not directly, but indirectly. People say, I am very ill, I have a psychosis or something. Why? Why is that? How can I live with this disorder, with this problem, with this thing, when I cannot be successful, between brackets, in my career, what can I do when I don't have a partner, when I am lonely, when my children don't speak to me, or all these terrible things that people tell in my consultation. Why? That's what people come to see me about. Sure. Yeah,
I think people have always searched for meaning. So yeah, the message yeah. in you...
That is very, very... People search for meaning. That is the most typical question of humanity. Our cats, our dog does not ask for meaning. I think
they are very happy with the sleeping.
Well, I don't know whether they're happy, but they don't ask for meaning. Our brain is built of humans is built that we ask for meaning, and of course the Western man, it's very difficult, this meaning. Mm-hmm. So the Western man tries to take away that meaning by living of success and fantastic and in a hedonistic way, but meaning always comes there. In my consultation, for example, when people suffer, or when they have a disease, or when their beloved ones go away, or they die, or things like that, when life doesn't go automatically, fantastically, then comes meaning.
The thing I find interesting about meaning is that suppose that we say, well, always looking for happiness, always this seeking and having yeah. these extremes yeah. is not very healthy. Then we could say, okay, maybe we should look for meaning, but yeah. then we can get in some kind of neurosis. I need meaning. Oh, is my
course.
Job meaningful?
It's always always looking for meaning is too much, probably. You have to try to live in, I would say, a normal way, but I mean, in Dutch I always say gewoonigheid, huh? Normalcy yeah. or something like that. Huh? And that because I don't want to make it moral, I don't want to say to people how to live. This normalcy can be very different, but it has to be some way of living in a good way, of having a feeling, this is how I live, this feels okay.
Huh? Would you say it's some kind of naturalness?
Yes, like yeah, normal, yeah, naturalness can, yeah, yeah, sure. And it can be very different for people. Huh? But it is far away from the sometimes very commercial ideal of life, being successful, being fantastic, being always looking for kicks, being special, being wonderful, paradise every day. And I think, well,
yeah,
let's take it easy. Let's take it easy. The good life is a life of nothing very special, always very special.
Would you say that we should instead just stop trying? Stop trying to be happy, even stop trying to find meaning. Just
that's what I try to write a bit. Stop trying obsessively being fantastically happy. Yes, that's what I try to write. But I'm not against happiness. Let me be very clear. I think when we can live this normal life, to feel okay and to feel making sense and to care for each other, I think that is more essential than looking for fantastic happiness every day, every moment. That's what I think.
Do you think that real happiness is found in the happiness of other people?
Yes, that's what I... That's the last chapter of my book. I am not against happiness, especially not against happiness of the other. So trying to make your beloved, or your friends, your family, other people, even people that you don't know, try to do something for them, to have meaning. I think that gives the feeling of a deeper, fundamental happiness more fundamental than a some kind of egocentric happiness of just being fantastic on its own.
I think the word ego is very interesting, because we seem to be in a society where there's a real focus on self-realization.
Sure, yeah. And I try to look, I'm not against a self or an ego, but I think that our society in the West is stressed too much the egoness, the autonomy, the success of that ego construct. And I think I try to stress the importance, what I said already, of connection, the importance of the other, the importance of relation, the importance of being with others, the importance of networking and things like that. And it is a balance, of course, between self and other. And I think the Western society nowadays, the stress on the self is... The danger is, let me be nuanced, the danger is that the stress on the self is too much, and the stress on the relationship and the stress on the other is too less. That's my hypothesis.
I think from my experience I would agree. I think you sometimes...
You can agree or disagree.
I'm just one
I
person,
try to make
person.
Hypothesis, and so I try to go in dialogue, relationship with others, so that people can think for themselves and yes. make their own hypothesis. You see? So I try, in my work, I try to be consequent with my thinking. I don't have the monolithic truth here. Mm-hmm. I have thoughts which I bring in interaction and in relation.
That's
and
actually also why I like to make a podcast, because
well,
sometimes I get interesting.
That's why I approve to do it for you, because I think it's important to have these thoughts in conversation. I don't have much time, but it's important. I can reach more people with your podcast than sitting here alone with one patient, which I do every day. It's a both end story, of course.
Yes, I think what my hypothesis really is about my own happiness, based on only my experience, is that I think I have this problem, and then I notice I create 95% of my own problems. I make it a problem by saying I like this.
That's okay for you, but of course I see people here who have. Really, sometimes terrible lives. So when a person comes here and says, "I've been abused as a child by my uncle or my father or things like that," then of course it will not help that I say, "Well, you create your own problem." Then we have a very severe reality that can be very destructive, and yet. My task is, how can we manage? How can we cope? How can we keep dignity? The very core business of my work as a psychiatrist is, how can we give and repair, reconstruct dignity? That is the central word. Not health, mm-hmm. not happiness, but dignity.
I've never thought about it.
It's my
dignity.
Hypothesis again.
How would you define dignity then?
The sense I am worth living. I can be here. It is okay. It is okay with me to exist, to be here. My existence can be lived. That's very important. That's the core business. It's a bit strange to say as a psychiatrist, because in medical psychiatry it is about illness and health. But I think for me it is about recovery, and it is about dignity. It is even when you have a diagnosis or you have a major mental problem or you have to take medication or you have to be in therapy or all these things, dignity. Huh? I am worth living. My life is worth living. That's the core business.
It's also because, from what I've read from your books, is that we are sometimes very hard on ourselves.
Well, yeah, we sometimes are very hard on ourselves, but more often we are hard for the others. Huh? And I think our society now, politically, and is very hard for the other. Huh? We tend to we tend to reinforce, and it's an illusion, to reinforce our sense of self by criticizing and even destructing the other. In our society, I hope I don't do it. And
it's like the executions on social media these
yes,
days.
Yes, of course, that is the superficial phenomenon of that. Yes, yes. We tend to survive by the destruction of the other. That is the danger. It is. I'm not an apocalyptic thinker, right? But the critic of our culture is that we have to beware of not surviving by destructing the other. We have to survive by caring for the other. That's how a society works. Caring, in the broad sense of the word, is the fuel for the relationship. That's how the network is established. That's how the selves can exist, as I said, in the network. Huh? When the network crumbles, the self disappears. Even when, in a first time, it will be swollen in some kind of narcissistic egoness, which is an illusion, huh? Which has a lot of emptiness inside. It's a metaphor to make it understandable.
It makes me think of one thing you said in your book. It was about the importance of comfort versus connection. Is that people are happier if they have more connection but less comfort than the other way around?
Well, that is what the French philosopher Levinas says. The other disturbs us. In our comfort,
As Sartre said, l'enfer, c'est l'autre.
Yeah, but you know that I disagree, and that, of course, you have to place that in a context. I think that Sartre would not disagree with what I will say. Now, I say, l'enfer, c'est le manque de l'autre. Eh? I think loneliness, having no one, no connections, totally isolated, no one to care for, no one to be cared from, is hell. Huh? Hell is having no one around. That's what I think.
Huh? I agree with you.
It's not so strange, I think, but of course that's what I say in my lectures. And people say, whoa, what is he saying there? Well, I have to think about that. And of course you have to think about that. I invite you to think. Huh? I don't give you truth. I give you sometimes a bit provocative thoughts. I hope that they are...
That's how you get people's attention these days.
Yeah, but that's what I do in my work as a psychiatrist also. I sit here with people. I don't say to them, you should live like this and like that. Don't do that and do that. No, I try to invite them to discuss, to tell them about their life and how they can find their own solutions for their life. I try to avoid saying how people have to live. It's not easy because people expect from a doctor, from a psychiatrist, how to that he says how to live, and then they say that's impossible. I can't. You're wrong. So it doesn't work. And dignity, what I said before, is to find out yourself how to live. When I have to say,
I've never looked at it.
When I have to say to someone, you have to live like that and follow me. I know it. Huh? You have to do this and that. I've read books about
it. There's a recipe,
and
I've wrote the book. So this is how you live.
It's against dignity, of course. Then people become small, small and dependent, and that's not a good way of doing psychotherapy. And this way of working in psychotherapy, that's what I try to do in a more broad way with my books in society. Inviting to reflect so that people can find their own solutions. The critic on my books is sometimes, well, you have you made a good diagnosis of the problems, and what do we have to do now? And I say, you have to find out yourself, just like my patients.
Yeah, I think if you know the source of your problem, or if you at least have a new hypothesis of the source of your problem, it's all already half of the battle, I think, sometimes.
Yeah, that's a good start. Yeah, reflection.
Yeah. For instance, when I read your book, I sometimes feel a bit lonely, and I read in your book that it's kind of a symptom of our society these days, and we live in these big cities and everybody lives alone, and it really made me think.
So that's okay.
Yes.
That's what I try to do with my books, that people really say, what is in here? And that they go to sleep or make a walk or they have a talk with someone else, and that they start thinking about all these. And maybe you can disagree. It's no problem to disagree, but you have to think. that's why we have a brain. Use it.
So thank you for listening, and I hope it was not too heavyweight. The meaning of life and other stuff. And I just wanted to ask, if you like this, please know that I have read multiple books of Dirk de Wachter to prepare for this interview. I have gone there, I have taken the interview, I have had multiple hours of editing, and I basically get nothing for that besides the appreciation that maybe some people like it. So if you want to do something in return, you can maybe share it with people, or you can maybe even give a donation for the podcast. Thank you very much. And I have good news, because there is a second part of this episode coming up soon with Dirk de Wachter. So if you want to stay up to date, do a donation or whatever you want, you can go to 20angles.com. And I hope we will hear each other, or you will hear me, because I will not hear you, for the second part of this interview.